report on the case classified it as...
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Natasha says, I am your host, Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone's having a great evening, great morning, great afternoon, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. Like I say every week, guys, I love doing this show. We cross every time zone on the planet, and we've grown from now to about 144 countries, 147 countries. It is phenomenal that I actually get to come do this, and people come listen and talk to us and write to us and learn and teach, and it's just a great thing in itself. And I got to thank the Internet for that because, you know, it took me probably another 10 years to get into AM or FM radio. Internet made it easy, you know, start a station, start a show, build a station, build a bunch of shows. that was all after iCar, and actually iCar was a big part of that, getting all of this going, because frankly, we needed a venue to get out, you know, information for our contact research, for our abduction research, for the different types of things that go on inside the organization and affiliates and friends of ours. So here we are, and that's what we're all about. One other side note, too, I just recently got a sighting report out of Spokane, Washington, about an hour ago, actually. If anybody heard anything or seen anything up there today, you know, write to me, upr@cox.net, icar@cox.net. You can call me in the second hour, 504-273-7379. I can take any questions the first hour, at least on the phone. But you are welcome to call in the second hour. Just curious. I mean, this report came in. The reason I'm curious about it is we had two reported abductions out of that area last night, and then a sighting today. So I'm always interested when we get both reports. So if anybody's seen anything up there, write to me. Tonight's guest is going to be George. He's coming on. He's a contact. Well, he might be an abductee. We'll have to ask him what he is. You know, I've been letting everybody slate their own thing right now, who's a contactee, who's an abductee. It's been interesting, to say the least. But, Joe, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Well, Joe, what do you think you are? Are you a contactee or an abductee? Before we even go any further, that's a good question right off the bat.
That is a good question. And, you know, I have a hard time with that because I think contactee means something peaceful or something.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. But then.
Obviously, that's not true, but go ahead.
But, you know, I consider myself an abductee.
Yeah. Well, yeah, most people do, really. For us, it's We cheat a little bit. For us, abductees are basically anyone who's not aware of what's going on. Whether you participate in it or not, I mean, because everyone is an abductee, okay? Unless he calls you on your phone and says, hey, John, Joe, or Mike, I'm coming to your house tonight to probe you, you're an abductee, because you're taken against your will. But there does come a point when, for us, we consider them contactees, because it's not so much that they're saying, okay, E.T., come pick me up, but they are fully and functionally aware of what's going on around them, and they're usually starting to assimilate some type of information, data, ideas, or designs about their abductors themselves. So we kind of move that more into the contactee because it's gone beyond the point of just being abductee because now you're starting to communicate with the aliens. Whether it's good or bad or indifferent, you have started doing it. I'm not saying you personally, but so that's kind of how we look at it. And like I said, there's a big blurred line in there, okay? Let's be honest about it. There's a big gray zone up in all of that for what a contact you would have. And I really do prefer to let people tag themselves because they got to live with it. You know, it's what they're dealing with, and I think it feels more comfortable. But let me get you to tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself. And then let's start off with something simple, like why do you think they chose you? But go ahead, man.
I was born and raised in Idaho, outside of a town called Caldwell. And I lived in Idaho all my life up to where I was about 24. So that's where everything basically started when I was living in Idaho. come from a big family of seven, Catholic family. I'm a writer, a poet, an artist. And I don't know what else to say.
That's okay. Everybody gets a little nervous on air a couple of times. Idaho is actually my national director, Dee Andrew, is from Idaho. She lives in Arizona now, but she's actually from Idaho. She's an Idahoian, whatever you call it. I used to give her hell because she's an Idaho. That's what I used to tell her. I used to get in a lot of trouble for that, by the way. Any ladies listening to Idaho tonight, that was a joke from my friend. Y'all don't write to me, all right? Oh, look, I'll start getting emails about those kind of remarks, man. That's one of the things. Now, but really seriously, why do you think, I mean, well, let me do this a little bit slow. What is the earliest age that you remember this happening? Because you're actually fairly young, so. What's the actual, well, I'm young, I mean, in transcript, you know, it's not like you're 100 or nothing.
it started at 5. Because I remember it was right before grade school, and I remember there was some time before I went to grade school, so definitely at 5 years old.
Now, let me ask you this: What do you remember seeing? I mean, was it? How can I put this? It wasn't like a conversation or anything. It was more like you were there, awake, aware, and then they were there. I'm just curious because I like, especially when people remember contact from childhood. I always like to know how it unfolded. I guess is what I'm asking.
Sure, I'll tell you what happened. It was like a summer day. I was out with, you know, playing out in the lawn, and we lived in a basement house, and it was nap time. So it's probably maybe about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember going into my bedroom, and I remember waking up, and all of a sudden the room got dark, like night. It was just really weird. I just got up, got dark, and there was a closet at the end of my bed. Anyway, I was drawn to go to the closet, and I pulled the curtain back, and I never really talked about this. It's probably the first time I really came out and said what this alien looked like, but like I said, I pulled back the curtain, and there was this maybe 3 feet tall, ugly-looking creature. And I've never talked about this because it just kind of freaks me out, but it was black, like an oily black color, and it had nubs on its head and big eyes. And the weird part about this is I wasn't afraid. It didn't scare me at all. And this gets really weird, so just bear with me.
Take your time, man. Yeah, take your time.
He was, like, sitting down, and I'm in awe about what I'm seeing. I'm just, like, going, what is this? And it was sitting down, but there was, like, no chair underneath him or anything. He was just sitting down without a chair. And on his lap, he had this blonde, alien-looking woman, smaller than he was. And he was pointing at her. And I looked at her, and I couldn't understand, you know, what that meant. Why did he want me to look at this other creature that he was with? And I know after years of this, thinking about it, I think I was being selected for their breeding program or whatever that's called. So I'm standing there. Yeah. I mean, it was, like I said, I've never really talked about this to anybody except for you right now.
Yeah, as I said, take your time. Don't
you know, just work through it on your own, because technically it's just me and you listening. Everybody else is listening, yeah. But we don't know that. So we ain't got
part of
that. I can't see them. You can't see them. So really true. It's just the two of us and a couple of people eavesdropping, I guess.
Okay.
That's a good way to put it. We're not going to get into how many people eavesdropping. But anyway, well, really, I do the show a lot like that. Most of my audience prefers that we do a show that is a little bit more like two people talking. Well, because really, truly, I have had people write in and say, I feel kind of dirty, like I'm eavesdropping.
Yeah.
Like, okay, people, that's enough. I don't need to know no more. Don't write and tell me nothing else, please. But anyway, I didn't mean to distract you, but...
No.
Yeah, just take your time and just work through. I mean, feel and talk about what you feel comfortable with, because I know a lot of this stuff, a lot of people don't feel comfortable with talking about on the air and stuff. So, you know, just take your time and I forgot where we were. All right. That's never good. But go ahead and I'll let you finish. I'll try not to interrupt you anymore.
Okay. That's all right. So I'm looking at this creature, and he's pointing down at this female other alien creature, which is smaller than he was. And so the next thing I know, it's like we're leaving the bedroom. I get out in the living room, and my mom is standing there. My mom is standing there with her mouth wide open, and she's frozen. You know, stiff. She's not moving. She's not doing anything. It was just really, I kind of looked at her like, you know, like I'm five. I'm just in awe about what's happening. So the next thing you know, we're walking towards the steps, you know, to go out. But we didn't take the steps because I think maybe 2 hours have passed. And all of a sudden, I remember snapping out of it. And I'm standing at in the driveway, at the end of the driveway, the entrance of the driveway. My mom is like, you know, waving at me like, hey, what's wrong with you? You know, it's dinner time, you know, come in. And I just kind of snap out of it. And I go and I sit down and have dinner, you know, with my siblings and my mom. And I had this, I didn't want to talk about what happened. You know, I don't think I could even formulate the words to, you know, to explain, gee, I just think I got busted. But nothing came out of me the rest of the night. And that was the very first time I remember. And it goes on, from, you know, there's, you know.
Yeah. Well, no, five is usually the age. Between 3 and 5 is usually the age people remember. I don't know why. I guess for adults, that's about as far back as you can actually remember any detail. I know people tell me all the time, well, I remember being born. I'm like, really? Hell, I can't remember nothing past age 3. And actually, now that I'm older, I can't remember nothing past age 5. So I'm not buying that. But still, I remember anything contact-related, mind you. That sticks out of my head quite clearly. There's a lot of other stuff that's going to the wayside, because frankly, I've been filling my brain with other stuff. So it's like, it's probably still in there somewhere. Just, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But that's the thing. I mean, around 3 or 5, that's when people start to remember. And what the real part is, probably only 1 in maybe 50 people told me there's any fear there. Most of the time, to be honest with you, I really don't start hearing about anything fear-related until around puberty, up until about age 28, 29. That seems to be the most volatile part of what's going on. And it's not that contact doesn't go on much longer. It does. It's just... around 28 to 30, it changes into a whole nother type thing.
Yes.
It gets really weird. But anyway, now, what do you think, what would be the next time you remember? What you were describing is just classic. I mean, it's just classic. You're standing there, all that's going on, your mom hollers, you turn around, you go in, and you kind of just, it's in your head, but it's kind of fading out. I mean, that's just classic stuff. So, but what do you think was the next time? It was still, I mean, you still had other childhood experiences? Or?
Yeah, I did. I think maybe a year later, we moved a lot. We moved, and my dad got a farmhouse, maybe about 3 miles away from our last house. So we're out in the middle of, you know, the country. And I remember one time it was really, and I can't understand it, but it was really bright that day, and it was really windy, and it was really warm wind blowing, and just seemed really surreal to me. So I remember I got back from school, and I wanted to go play outside because it was, you know, windy and it was real cool. And so I went outside by myself. For, you know, nobody came with me. And I'm playing, you know, we had like some inner tubes. So, you know, I was playing fort with inner tubes. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there is a huge orange orb in the sky right in front of the sun. But it didn't block the sun. It was radiating all that light that I thought was the sun. And, you know, you can't stare at the sun.
Yeah, you can't.
But I was like, yeah, I was just staring at it in awe, going, you know, well, that's the biggest... the biggest orange sun I've ever seen. And I was just like, you know, going, yay, it's really neat. I like it. And so I'm excited. And, you know, I cut some flowers for my mom. I remember cutting some flowers for my mom. And this was the weird part other than the big orb in the sky. But I went inside and everybody was in a trance. Like, you could put your hand in front of them, and they wouldn't snap out of it. And I, to this very day, I don't know what that was all about, but I walked in, and everybody was just, like, staring at the TV, but there was just no emotion.
Yeah, they were zapped, that's why.
Yeah, they had been, and my mom just kind of turned over and looked at me, and she goes, "Why did you cut those flowers for?" And then she just turned back to the TV, and I just felt so, I felt so awful. It was just like, why is everybody not talking, or why is everybody staring at the TV? And I don't remember anything after that, but I think we probably all got taken that day, or something was, you know what I mean? It's just like you walk into your, you know, living room and everybody's in a daze and they're staring at the TV and there's a big orb in the sky that, you know, and the wind's blowing and it was just a really weird, very strange to me.
Yeah, it's and like one of them old cartoons when guys pointing at the thing coming down the road and everybody in the room sitting there, okay. It's weird. I mean, I've seen people zapped out. I've been actually in crowds when abductions are gone because we've been in, unfortunately, been in the middle of some mass abductions, and it's weird. You'll be standing there, and
yeah,
they'll zap, you know, and everybody's just like zombies. You know, I guess zombies not a good word because they're
that's
alert enough that they
it.
Know something's going on, but they don't have any real self-control of their own. No willpower, I guess, might be a better way of saying it, because they're definitely functioning, but they just don't seem to have any real willpower, and they just seem to go with the flow. And a very suggestive, I noticed as well. Because as a kid, I used to tell my mom, "Give me money." and then, you know, she'd wake up and, "Why did I give you that money?" "I don't know, Mom. You just talking about giving me money." See, I learned how to use this stuff to your advantage, man.
Uh-huh.
It's a joke, but it's a true story at the same time. Because she'd be zapped out. Because I didn't really know what was going on. I had not a clue. I was a kid, you know. I'm like, what the hell is this? And there'd be like a house full of people just kind of nodded out of it. But there was always some kind of, I don't know how to explain this. There was always almost like the house itself was in a bubble or a shell. It's hard to explain. That, and I don't want to necessarily say there was an absence of noise, but there was an absence of something. It's something I talk about contactees a lot. There's something when you're there's something that it's almost like an absence of reality, but it's not. It's I wish I knew what the hell it was, to be honest. It's one of the reasons I do this show, and international director for iCar, so I can try to find out what the hell it is, because it's making me crazy. But now, so what age were you around then?
I was probably six,
seven. Seven. Wait, and that sounds like a classic probe thing. You know, it's weird. I don't hear about this much anymore, but in the late 80s, early 90s, we used to hear about these orbs all the time, and they would run up, and people would be staring at them. But the funny part was they'd be staring at them, and the next thing you know, it'd be like 5 hours later or 7 hours later, sometimes the next day. But we don't really see that as much as we used to. It's, I guess ET learns just like we learn, and they change the way they deal with us, probably because of researchers that are figuring out some of the stuff they're doing. Because I noticed they, at first I thought, well, did ET stop doing this? And then I realized, no, ET just changed their damn ways. They just kept, now you were given a description. Now, did you see any beings doing that, or that was just the orb, and then that was it, or?
Yeah, the orb, but it was just a real strange.
Yeah.
It looked organic. It reminded me of an egg yolk. It was orange and you know, like you could almost touch it. And it was just, and this amazing wind was blowing, and it was warm, and this, and the light was, wasn't even like sunlight. It was some kind of, it was a different kind of a light, you know, maybe like a fluorescent type light. You know,
something bathe and everything. I know people describe light as being warm, like it's laying over them. A lot of people even describe it like a, almost like a comfortable blanket being laid over. I think the description has a lot to do with how the light is affecting you personally, to be honest with you. Because some people describe it like, yeah, it's putting me night-night, and some people describe it as, oh, no, I feel a light. It makes me feel comfortable and safe, but they're not acting like it's knocking them out or dazing. But on the other hand, the other ones are. They're acting like, oh, it's all comfortable and snuggly and like it's putting me to sleep. And it's just a weird sensation from what
it
seems like. And I don't even know how they do it. I'm sure it's some kind of energy wave they use to, something probably off of one of the ships. And I've heard about it before. But that's another thing. Different areas of the country are prone to different abductions, which is something we'll probably be releasing later this year. It didn't dawn on me until about a decade ago, but after doing research, there does seem to be correlations between different areas of the country and abductions. For me, it's like this. There's the upper West Coast, lower West Coast. Okay, it's distinctively two different types of abductions. The Heartland and the South are distinctively two different kind of abductions. Same thing with the lower and upper East Coast. They're distinctively different. Even though a lot of these involve the same type aliens, or I like to say kin of the same type aliens, the abductions are dramatically different. For whatever reason, I have no idea. As far as I can tell right now, there's not even a reason for it, which I'm sure there is, but nothing that we've seen inadvertently. Now, what was the next thing that happened to the light? I mean, it just went away, or was it hanging out, or?
You know, and I don't remember anything after I went into the house. Yeah, and that was it. That's all I remember. But I'm sure there's more to it than just me coming into the house and coming into the living room and everybody's like zombie-like state. There's more to that, but somehow I can't remember what else happened after that. You know, and
that's common. You know, it's frustrating. Now, you know, have you considered hypnosis or anything like that along the lines
of
body recovery?
I have, but I haven't found anybody that I could, you know.
I really be real careful.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You have,
The only person who's getting hypnotized me is my wife, you know, and look, I'm still having issues with that, and I know she's good because I see her do it all the time. I don't know, something about hypnosis bothers me. Personally, I don't mean that, because it is useful as a tool, it's just, you got to be so careful with it. I was listening the other night to a very famous ufologist, and I was very disappointed by this. God rest his soul, he's a very famous ufologist, and I'm listening to him talk to an abductee contact, he's doing an interview. And he was using words that today he would be chastised for severely for even using those words in the field, like aliens and spaceships. And it was John Mack and people who are listening. I got to say, I was that interview really put him in a different light for me. It was two interviews, actually. And he really, really, they were bad. But back then they were allowed to do this. You can't fault him because that was part of the way it worked then. You know, and we learn from our mistakes, just like the people who are going to follow from us are going to learn from our mistakes. And then again, it goes, God, that Joe guy was crazy, man. Where did he get that idea from? But still, that's how you do it. I mean, you have to learn from each other's mistakes and just keep moving forward. Now, what was the next thing that you remember? Still in your childhood? Or?
Yeah, there was just a lot of strange things that, you know, went on. And one night, my little sister said she saw somebody standing in the window. She said it was very black, dark shadow standing outside the window. And when my sister said that, there was immediate, everybody got silent, like, I know what you're talking about. So we were pretty, you know, we were all aware of what that meant, that there was something out there that we couldn't explain, and it, you know. But that's, you know, it's another weird, you know, electricity going off and just, you know,
This is so deep inside of families that it's really weird. And some families are open about it. Some families will write it off as paranormal, as ghosts, or special gifts, or what have you. But
yeah,
and some families will accept it for what it is. And you just never know until it happens. But we do know it runs in family lines. So, but we've also had family lines where we know that at least two or three generations of the parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents were being picked up, but they weren't saying anything. But in the same retrospect, we have cases go back six generations now that we know everybody's being abducted forward and backwards from great-great-granddaughter to great-great-grandmother and everybody in between. So we do know it works that way. It's just some people remember, some people don't. And I'll never admit, the only thing we can honestly figure is that the people that are allowed to remember are people they have plans on using somewhere along the line. Because, frankly, there are literally tens of thousands of abductees that will never, ever, ever, ever know they were abducted. They will never. They might suspect something weird is happening in their life, but they will never. They will live and die and not know. And they just won't. And that's the majority. I mean, we're in the minority. The people who remember are a very small minority. But they do seem to be people who, you got to be careful because it'll take over your life. It'll take over your life in a fashion.
Yeah, it has. I did in my 30s. It consumed me. It consumed me so much that it was, you know.
Sounds familiar.
It was awful.
Sounds familiar to me, man. I used to get in fights with my wife, with my friends, with my family.
Yeah.
I can't wait to spend that much time getting money on it. It takes over. Unfortunately, it takes over in a major way too. And I don't know. For me, I'm gonna be 47 or 48, somewhere around there. And it's honestly true. If I would have took every dollar that I put into this over the last 30 years, I could be retired now, sitting pretty, living in the Bahamas somewhere. You know, that's the really bad part. But still, I have a drive for this, and see, and that's what I'm saying. That's the point I'm making, though. It seems like the people, the only ones they let remember are the ones that are going to be useful to them. And I got to give them credit for this. Good, bad, or indifferent, or how anybody thinks about the aliens, they do let these people develop this on their own. They don't seem to be shocking you in, even though it's a shock, because, I mean, it's freaking aliens. They don't seem to be shocking you into it. In other words, they're letting you keep bits and pieces so that you can put them together, because they could simply wipe those bits and pieces out if they wanted to. So they allow you that, and I think that's part of the test. Is he ready? Can he handle it? Is he in a nut house yet?
Yeah.
Maybe we can tell him a little bit more. And maybe we could use him for this, and maybe use him for that. Kerry Wilson and Melinda Leslie and Leah Hammond, some other friends of mine out there in the field, like Melian and Jim, seem to think this is a communicator thing, that these people are being used to communicate not so much the message of what E.T. is doing here, but the fact that E.T. is here and is doing something. It's not like the New Agers like to say that, you know, they're here for peace, love, and light, and change, because it's really not what it's about. But
no.
You know, they do want this information out there. But, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, they don't want this information out there so much for the 5 billion non-contactees. They don't really care if y'all know, if you don't, to be honest with you. They really don't. This is for the other people out there that are being contacted and may have some kind of weirdness in their head that might be making, this is to let them know that they're not alone and there's others out there. That's more what it's for. Everybody always makes the mistake that the communicators are for the general population. I got to be honest with you. I don't think ET cares about the general population at all, in any shape, form, or fashion. From everything I've seen them do in the 30 years I've been in this field suggests that they don't care about the regular population. They just don't. They're like, yeah, whatever. Well, they don't, because, I mean, see, like with you, we're talking. Any time along what so far this conversation we're on, I think your third event in your childhood, any time they could have terminated you in here and said, okay, well, we've had enough of this. Or any time along that line, they could have wiped your memory and stopped contact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I wish they would do that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people wish they would do that. But, see, I don't know anymore. When I was younger, I used to say that. When I'm mad and I'm older, I don't know. I've kind of gotten used to it. It would be like an old, long-lost shoe that I really liked wearing. I can't find it anymore. Not quite like that. But the point being that it's so much a part of my life now that I don't know how I would react if it wasn't there anymore. It would be one of them. It would definitely be weird, man, that's for sure. I hope if I could get them to do something, I would like them to get rid of this urge I have to be doing this all the time. Because then I could start traveling again. Go out and spend some money on some stuff that I like boating or fishing or traveling to Europe or something. Oh, I want to go see Kate and what's his name get married. What's his name again? Prince William?
Yeah.
So I remember this. Kate. Sorry. Before we get back into this conversation, now starting on May 5th, Second Sight NYC will be live on the network. They will be appearing 8 to 9 o'clock. On Thursday night, so it's Stephanie Benetti and Chris. Oh, I forgot Chris's last name, but I'm going to remember. I'll tell you. He's going to shoot me. But anyway, they will be starting live on Thursday nights, May 5th. That's week after next. They're a really good show. I really enjoy them. They're a lot of fun. They're high energy, and they're good at what they do. Also, for a friend of mine who used to host Portal Talk Radio, if y'all see Tuesday, we're trying to bring Tuesday back on the network. She's weekends. Everybody write into her. Get her back. She used to host Portal Talk Radio. She's an outstanding host, and I am looking forward to seeing her back on. For our regular listeners, Tree Sheridan is back on the network with Global Focus on Friday night. She fields Angela Joyner's old slot, and I have to say she's done a fabulous job doing it. Looking forward to seeing records being set on this show. And she got big shoes to fill between Portal Talk Radio, who was there first, and AJ, who was there second. And I think she's not going to have any problem doing it. And so, okay, a little commercial in there. We can move on there. Oh, and by the way, you're listening to UPRN 105.7, if you want. That's my deluxe self speaking. Now let's puberty 13, 14, 15, somewhere up in there. You remember any contacts in that area? Go ahead, I'll let you talk about them.
Yeah, when I was probably going to enter the seventh grade, so this was 70. This was 73, and I was on vacation. I was in Burley, Idaho, visiting my aunt, and we took off on a Sunday. This was the last Sunday of August, and we were, you know, driving through the back roads for some reason. I don't know. It was just kind of what my aunt wanted to do, and just kind of take our time getting back home, and then, you know, right before sunset, things got really, I mean, like, I still don't understand the whole thing, but we wound up getting lost right before sunset, and we drove into this work camp, and the same thing, everybody, we drove around, you know, kind of did a U-turn, and there was people outside, but they weren't moving. They were all zombied out, I mean, like, not moving, and blank stare on their face, and, you know, I'll never forget it. I was in the back seat, and we did our U-turn. I saw this guy. He was just like nothing. He wasn't even moving or flinching. And then as we drove out, we got lost again. And so then my aunt wanted to take a break, and, you know, so we did. We pulled over. And so we all get out of the car and get, you know, stretch our legs. And then I look across the field, and I see 9 lights in a row hovering. No noise, know nothing, just, and I'm staring at this going, I'm trying to figure out what I'm looking at. I'm going, my first reaction was, what am I, is it a stadium out here? What's, you know, what is that?
My aunt,
yeah, and then my aunt and my cousin were all like, just staring at this for about 5 minutes or more, and I'm like in awe. I think it's cool. So we get back in the car and we drive, and maybe about 20, you know, 15 minutes into the drive, I notice that we're being followed. Somebody following us had the bright lights on, and it was a good 30 minutes until they turned, because we were heading back on the main highway heading home. And so that really freaked me out, and I thought, and I already knew at that time, I knew what was happening. I knew that it was a UFO, and then I knew who was following was trouble, that they didn't want us to be there. But, couldn't help. we were drawn there for some reason. So we get back about 1 o'clock in the morning, and, I'm all excited, saying, Mom, we saw, 9 UFOs in the sky. And my mom is like, had this look of dread on her face, like, that's the last thing she wanted to hear. And my mom didn't talk about it, but my dad did later. But my mom was, she's Hispanic, Catholic woman. She never wanted to, this is like taboo. But then a month later passed, and I'm doing my homework in the kitchen, and I had the radio on, and they do a commercial break, and the news comes on, and all of a sudden they're talking about the strange light and cattle mutilation in that area. And I knew exactly what area it was, and that's the time I knew that it was going to get bad for me. But I knew that, anything more after this was going to be intense. And I was just like, oh, man. And I'd never been so scared. I mean, my back of my hair stood up, and I'm like, this is for real. This is something that's going to turn out maybe not so good.
Well, sure, that's always one of them wonderful ones. Yeah, you're like, okay, what the hell is going to go on here? Now, do you physically remember them taking you anywhere in there, or just, because I know sometimes, a lot of times no one remembers anything there other than the fact that they were taken. There's probably damn good reasons for it. But I got to ask, anywhere in your teenagers, do you remember them? It's not so much you knowing they were there, more like did you actually physically see them removing you, I guess is what I'm looking for.
No, I never... I never, other than when I was, back when I was in grade school, I remember having this reoccurring dream about, being in the car, flying in the air, and going to the moon's eye. I'm 8, 9,
five,
six,
yeah.
7 years, and that was the imagination, the only thing I could, not an imagination, but I knew something was up, because we were always seemed to be flying in the air, and we're heading, and I remember always looking, and I see the moon, and I see the moon eye, and we're going into the moon's eye. This went on for a long, long time. So I kind of didn't understand that, but when this happened, this last major sighting, then I really kind of put everything, just kind of came together. So yeah.
But
I don't remember anything. I don't remember.
Usually you don't in those years. The few people that the few people who actually really wanted to find out what was going on in those years, me being one of them, it was a mistake. And the reason it's a mistake, I can live with most of what I remember. Don't get me wrong, I don't remember all that much. I do remember probably if I had to put in an hour's, 20 or 30 hours worth of stuff that happened, but they probably had me for literally hundreds. But that's all I remember. And out of that, I really didn't need to know. I mean, some of the stuff they do from like age 12 to age 28, it's just very intrusive. And they're doing a lot of things that, as humans, we would consider to be very intrusive. I mean, it's because of the kind of people we are. We'd be like, whoa, what are you doing there? Wait. But yeah. For them, and you can tell by the way they're reacting that this isn't any big deal to them. So, and they're going on their little merry way doing it. But some of those experiments are very, very rough. And
they are.
And now I know why they blocked those memories, because frankly, there's no need to remember that shit. I'm going to be honest with you. There's just no need to remember that. And I think ET does that as a gift. A lot of people say, oh, they're doing it. And I used to be with everybody else. I used to think, oh, they're blocking it. They don't want us to remember. But they're blocking it for our own personal well-being. They're saying, look, you don't want to remember all these stuff, all these different breeding experiments, all these other types of experiments, all these emotional experiments, any training they got you doing, you know, a lot of the stuff. You just want to just say, okay, well, you did it. We don't need to talk about it. You know, let's just write that off on another thing. So that does happen. Now, after any of these events, any strange marks, bruises, cuts, marks, holes?
Well, I do remember having a lot of bloody noses.
That's common.
Yeah, I mean, for a while, my mom and dad were really concerned, thinking maybe there was something wrong. You know, but other than that, I mean, I really did. It wasn't later until my 30s and 40s that I later came up with the marks. And there was a time, I think I was 32, and I was standing in front of the mirror, and I was going to go out and meet some friends. It was my birthday, and, you know, and I felt kind of scratchy in my nose. I just took my finger and rubbed underneath my nose, and lo and behold, this little BB comes out of my nose. And it looked organic, didn't look like a steel BB, but I freaked. And at that time, I already knew what was going on. So it's like, God damn, what is this? And I took it between my thumbnails to break it open, and it disappeared.
Yeah. You know, it's odd you said that, because when I was about 9 years old, I was out playing with some of my friends and we had this little pebble garden. And we were out there doing stupid stuff, shoving rocks and stuff in the nose. And one of them got stuck in my nose. I shouldn't even be saying this on the air. I get emails for months about this. So it took me to take the rock out. Well, when they did, they pulled the rock out, and it was looked like a stainless steel pellet fell out. And the doctor's like, what the hell is this? Because it was actually embedded in my skin. What happened was, when he pulled the rock, he could see it, and he was kind of, I guess, poking at it with the tool he was using, and it popped out. And he's like, well, this has been in your sinuses for quite some time. I'm like, well, I didn't know it was there. And he did it, and he set it down on in the little tray, and he went to push down on it, and, you know, to see what it was, and when he flipped his finger up, it was gone. He was like, damn. He said, well, I don't know what that was. And he didn't even want to talk about it anymore. I said, but I mean, I was 8, 9 years old at the time, so I didn't pay much attention to it. You know, I'm like, well, maybe it was stuck on a rock when I shoved it up my damn nose. I didn't know. Now I actually know what it is. You know, we're talking, you know, decades later, I actually knew what it was.
Yeah.
But I always, you know, so when I was about 35, 36, I was a little later than that. You know, that playing around here, I started asking contactees to ask ET about implants. Because, you know, we do a lot of programming with contactees, or we don't program so much, they program themselves, but we usually we'll get contactees that are working with us to ask ET questions. And, you know, we'll get them to repeat the question in their minds until it's sort of subconscious. When they see the alien, they just broadcast a question without thinking about it. A lot of times the alien will broadcast an answer without thinking about it, which sometimes there are consequences for doing that kind of stuff. But to make a long story short, we started asking about implants, especially the gray types, which aren't really gray, but especially those types, they were like very few people are implanted. And it's not for anything that we even thought it might even be. We thought it was like for monitoring or tracking. The only ones that are used for tracking is the government. ET tracks your 3D DNA, which is something the government's working on, by the way. They should be able, they were talking about there's a unique chemical breakdown in everyone's blood, and it should be detectable from orbit, which I thought was extremely interesting. This is one of the very many things our U.S. government is working on. So I don't know. I figure, you know, when I hear stuff like that and transfer of consciousness between, you know, from a chip to a host body that our government's working on, those kind of things, and then I stop and think about aliens that might be anywhere from a million to several billion years older than we are, I kind of think, oh, shit, they should be able to do this quite easily. It shouldn't be effortless for them. So, you know, that's why, because people ask me all the time, should I fight back? I said, well, you can. It's not going to make any difference, but you can. You might inadvertently hurt a gray or a reptilian or a human, but trust me, you're going to wish you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just have a hard time because we get the peace, love, and writers a lot. And I tell it to people all the time, it's not that I think E.T. is evil or that I think E.T. is good. I really don't think E.T. views concepts like we do. They definitely don't view time and space at all like we do. And as far as good and evil, those are man-made concepts. I'm not sure that E.T. actually views us in those, because that's a very limited term for them. But I'm not thinking that's what it is. And, you know, when it comes to good and evil, and I use this example all the time, the Twin Towers, for Americans, in most of the world, that was a surely evil thing, but not for all the world. There's a good billion people or more on the planet that did not think that was a bad thing. So, you know, good and evil is in the eye of the beholder, like everything else on planet Earth. And I said this before, it's not just that. There's other things that go on that people may consider to be good, and other people may consider to be bad. You know? Me and the lady walks in the store at the same time, I get a ticket, she gets a ticket, I win the lotto, she don't. She thinks it's bad, I think it's freaking fantastic. It's just a concept, and I don't think E.T. looks at us in the terms of good or bad. I think they look at us in the terms of non-educated life forms in the universe. I think they're thinking, well, one day they might have potential. I don't even think they think we got potential as it sits right now, because frankly, we're a messed up society. But by saying that, they do have a keen interest in us. A lot of people say they think, a lot of people think that, seem to think that we're so much like them that they're just all here watching us evolve so that they can, you know, learn how they evolve. I'm not buying that one. I gotta be honest, I'm not buying that one.
No, I think they're more concerned about how the outcome of this is going to be, the human race.
Well, you know, it's a weird thing because if the Sumerians are telling us the truth, or if the Sumerians text is close to the truth, and the Egyptian text is close to the truth, I think things are going to turn out much different than anybody realized, because it looks like we may share DNA with at least two of these races. And if we do, we're already one up on them, you know?
Yeah.
Not right now, but eventually we will be smarter, brighter, and faster than they are because we're a combination of the two. And if it's true that the Greys are intervening and we got their DNA, that means we're a very unique race in the universe. And this is another odd thing. Recent science suggests that Earth may not be from the Milky Way. It may be from that red dwarf galaxy that's being eaten up by the Milky Way. If that's true, then it's even more of a reason why they would be here. Because we're not native to their galaxy. It's a real good time to study us, look at us. And if they are interbreeding with us, then here you have a very unique species, a species that has 3 to 4 different types of aliens that are all advanced, which means one day we will, you know, it's like the master and the teacher. One day the teacher becomes the master. And I think you're right. I think that's what they're worried about. I don't think it's today or even a million years from now. I'm thinking they're thinking 300-400 million years. What kind of race are we going to be?
Because
at this current dance of evolution, we'll be like gods in 500,000 years. We'll have technologies that we can't even shit. We have technologies that our ancestors couldn't dream of. So you know what we're gonna. I don't know. I think that they got a vested interest in this planet to see how it turns out. And I don't. I got to be honest with you. I don't think they're short of wiping us all out if they don't like the way it's heading either.
Yeah.
True. We would wipe out an anthill if it was going to eat all of our gardens. So. And not even think nothing about it. You know. Hey, let me kill all the ants right there. Damn it. I know the person just sent me that IM. We're not ants. No, you don't think we're ants. You don't know how the ET thinks of us. Okay? You don't know how they think of us. Don't be making assumptions. That's not a good thing. Now, we keep getting sidetracked here. Hell, we're almost up for break. Before we go to break, we got about 3-4 minutes. Quick question. Let's say, let me back up. Do you remember seeing any people, say, out of your family, when any of this stuff was going on, you know, just someone human that didn't belong there?
outside my family, yeah. Never forgotten this. I was going to the University of Oregon in Eugene, and I was walking back from a class, and there was a guy hanging out the window, and people were making jokes, and this couple comes up to me, and she was trying to be funny, too, and she was probably 5'4", so she was small, and I looked at her, and her skin looked like plastic. And like, I've never seen anybody look like that, any type of skin. She just, God, I hope she didn't see him, but I had to take a good look at her, and I looked at her real closely, and I went, wow. And her eyebrows, she painted on her eyebrows, but she, it just looked like plastic, and I always had this feeling that they were, like, checking up on me.
If you get a chance, there's a book out there called Helen's Eyes. You should read it. It's two friends of ours wrote it. Not that everything in the book is accurate, because I'm sure there was some stuff in there that wasn't. But it's about a hybrid that was going to a local college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a very interesting story, because the hybrids, the one check out there would tell you that the hybrids are good enough that look like us. But no, I don't think those are hybrids. They're definitely designing something out there, and I don't think it's hybrids, because all the hybrids we've seen didn't look anything like anybody, or I should say that we've seen.
Uh-huh.
The other contactees have described that look human. And the thing about this is, and more importantly, they've been here a really long time. If they were trying to create a hybrid of us that looked more human and less like them, I think they would have achieved that several thousand years ago. So I don't think that's what they're doing here. I think people are making too many assumptions in those areas of what they're actually doing here. But, we've been doing recently a bunch of our abductees and contactees decided that they wanted to be like voice stressed or facial recognition. But I guess because they get tired of people calling them, liars that are making this up. And we do it for some people. I mean, the thing about it is, Rachel's eyes. I said Helen's eyes, didn't I? Rachel's eyes. Thank y'all for correcting me. Helen was literal. That's why I said Helen's eyes, because I was thinking about Helen. But anyway, the book's called Rachel's Eyes. And both the ladies that are involved were really nice ladies. I met them out in Laughlin. And I like to meet anybody that I'm doing stuff with, because I like to know if they're really sincere or not. It's hard to tell in a phone conversation how sincere someone is, but when you meet them in person, it really isn't. And but if you get a chance, look at it, because it has a lot like what you were describing, that lady. It might be something along those lines. But you know what? We got to take a break. So everybody, I want y'all to please stay right where you're at. Actually, you should get up, stretch your legs, get a Coke, pop some popcorn, get a snack. We're going to be back in about 8 or 9 minutes. Until then, smile. We ain't going away for long. See y'all in 8.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
We'll be right back. Hi, I'm psychic medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Benetti.
And we're Second Sight NYC, a psychic and paranormal radio show based out of New York City.
And Chris is a psychic that tells it like it is.
So if you want something sugar-coated,
just buy a donut.
Each week we'll have an interesting guest, and I'll do psychic readings and dream interpretations with a psychic twist.
We touch on all that is paranormal, from exorcisms to ghost hunting.
From seances to passing spirits in a light.
Yeah, and sometimes Chris gets a little carried away.
But Stephanie's always there to reel me back in. We're making the unbelievable believable.
Join us.
The Church of Mavis with hosts Jeffrey Richard and Guy Wedwell. 10 p.m. Central Saturdays. Opening the gates of the underworld and calling down beings of ancient starlight. Tune in. Watch the apocalypse on the Paranormal Radio Network. Come to our forum at MavisIncarnate.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out a reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw and hit the weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Let's put out Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, yells. Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Welcome back, everyone, to UFO Undercover. I am your host, Joe Montaldo. Hope y'all are enjoying the show so far. I have a guest of ours with us this evening, and actually we should call him an abductee because that's what he said earlier in the show. But anyway, I hope everyone enjoyed the show. We're going to get into a few more questions here. Also, while I'm thinking about this, I will open up the phone lines. Wait about 5 to 10 minutes. Let's get back into the conversation, and if y'all want to call in, you can. 504-273-7379. Again, 504-273-7379. And who is this? Let's see who this is.
Hello?
Hey, who's that?
I won't use the facility. I go there last week.
Oh, you calling in? What, you got a question for the guest?
Yes, the question is about the skin complexion of the children, of the people he saw.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead, ask away. Go ahead.
Yes, so the when you see these people, the skin itself is different, it is changed in the scales of the face. Is different.
Did you get that, Joe? Or?
No, I didn't hear that very well.
Yeah, I know, you're coming in muffled.
So when you were to see the man who look in the appearance, is different. The skin complexion is plasticine. It looks different each way.
Oh, okay. He's asking about that skin complexion of that girl that you were talking about, the one that looked like the plastic skin before we went to break here.
Uh-huh.
And nice to have you calling back in tonight anyway. I guess you want to know more about it.
It's good to hear you too, Joe.
Oh, yeah, it's good to hear you too. Man, I'm about to get with you. Rudd, send me your email. I want to talk to you about something else because I know you've had your own experience. Send me an email over at uprn@cox.net. Okay, so I know how to get back in touch with you.
Okay, Joe, I've been trying to contact you, so thank you very much.
All right, thanks, man. Now, I think what he was wanting to know was like the texture, the feel. Did you feel it? The girl's skin?
No, I didn't. But I could just tell, and the bones. Now that I remember, the bone structure of her face and the skin, it just didn't look real at all. It just, you know, and even her eyes, you know, her whole face and skin texture just didn't, I mean, it was enough for me to, like, to stare. And that, you know, when that doesn't happen very often, but that time, it really threw me because I knew it wasn't right. There was something not right with her.
Well, I can understand that. I still stare at him. You know, I remember me as a kid when my mom said it was rude to stare. I see an alien, I still stare. I'm like, excuse me? What, are you looking at me, buddy? No, anyway. I've been real fortunate because we'll be traveling or something, you know, doing investigations. We were in Golfreys a while back. For anybody listening local in New Orleans, y'all know where Golfreys is. It's not too far. It's about 3.5 hours, which is, it's a mecca for contact down there. Well, every now and then we'll go down there. We're a group, 5, 8, 10. Last time we were down there, I think it was 13 people, 14 people with us. And lo and behold, they just popped up right on the damn beach near Eglin Air Force Base for the whole group. And every now and then we're wondering stuff like that. Or like tonight, there was a bunch of us that watched them abducting people on the beach. There's certain areas in this country, and I got a rough idea where you are right now. There's actually some not far, well, I should say on the coastal part of the state you live in. There's probably a good bit of activity there because there's a couple of areas, putting in perspective, like the Seattle, Tacoma, Vancouver area, Washington State. That's a mecca, man. Look,
there are abducting
people.
Where I live.
They're abducting people in Washington State like it's I don't know.
Oregon.
I don't know how to put it in words. I mean, Oregon's pretty busy too.
Yeah.
Oregon itself is pretty busy too. But that's the point I was making earlier in the show about the upper West Coast and the lower West Coast. California, even though it has an enormous amount of sightings, its abduction activity is about equal with Oregon and Washington. Well, Oregon, Washington, and Vancouver, in Canada, Vancouver. So you put them in there, and it's equivalent to a little more than what California is doing. And it's different. It's a different type of gig going on. And even if it seems to be the same type of aliens, they seem to be running two entirely different scenarios, top and bottom. And it's interesting to see because, you know, I can watch the progression all the way up from Argentina in South America all the way up the entire West Coast to Vancouver, Canada, which is really nice for me. Quick question for you. You know what type blood you are?
O negative.
Oh, Lord, another one. O negative is starting to scare me now, man. Lord. I actually like the last 6 people on the show are O negative. Let me tell you what, guys. O negative. O is, yes, is a popular blood. 38% of the people in the world have O. Only 7% of the people in the world have O negative. Which, by the way, like 60% of all contactees so far are O negative. So you got to kind of wonder about that. Hold on here.
Yeah, now I am.
You know, well, we've been doing some blood type research, and we've actually done a lot of different types of research over the last few months, or a few years, I should say. And it's been yielding some stuff that I just wasn't expecting, to be honest with you. I wasn't expecting to see trends in blood types. It actually makes sense to me now that I see it, because I understand more of what they may be doing. But still, I got to kind of wonder about it. To put it in perspective, if you live in South America or you live in Central America, it's a 99.9% chance you have O blood, okay? 99% of them have O blood. And there's only two types of prominent contact in South America. One's reptilian, one's gray. And so one of them two are probably responsible for the O blood. We just ain't sure which one it is yet. But by saying that, we also know in the European continent, there seem to be two prominent types of blood, A and B, which are fairly still prominent there today, which also happen to be fairly common in the Middle East, which is where they say the aliens, the human aliens, and the reptilians showed up originally, was in the Middle East, to the Sumerians. So they may be A and B, and the gray may be O, but we actually have more evidence now to suggest that we probably do share common blood types with these aliens somewhere along the line. And then there's a really unique thing. 25,000 years ago, you know, there used to never be an Rh negative factor. It just showed up out of the blue 25,000 years ago. And out of that came all of us O negative people, which we can donate blood to anybody on the planet, anybody. But we can only take O negative. We're the universal donors. 7% of the world, and get this, in World War II, in part of World War I and World War II, if it wouldn't have been for the universal donors, we'd have lost way more soldiers than we actually did. So it's these things pop up out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden it's changing our society and saving lives. And then, faced with some scientists and some psychologists, they have been personality typing the blood types, which I find interesting in itself. Personality traits to particular blood types. Interesting. That all started because A positive people tend to be like really, really, really nice leaders or really, really, really cruel ones. You'd be amazed if some of these people got A plus blood, man. I mean, it's a scary, hairy SFBs. And so there's trends. There seems to be trends in it. So it makes sense that aliens would be particularly interested in particular blood types, particular for reasons. But if they created us or helped to create us, and then they created another blood type for us so that we can survive and go on, then you've got to wonder what all this is about. You know? But there's definitely a correlation to blood types in contactees. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's actually pretty cut and dry now. O negative. Negatives. Rh negatives make up more than 65% of the contactee base that we have right now. That went up from just in the last few months. Went up from about 50%, and it's steadily climbing. I mean, we get positives, just not at the rate we thought we were going to, and a lot of the positives we get are O's. So the A's and the B's and the AB positives are seemingly getting less and less on our list. You know, 8%, 10%, 12%, something like those ranges. ET's doing something, and he's doing something very particular, and I don't know what the outcome is, but they definitely seem to be modifying at least some of us. And, or maybe that's what it is. Maybe the ones that were modified way back in the day is the ones they're looking for today. Meaning, like, in your family 50,000 years ago, there may have been a modification, and that might be why you're an abductee today. There's something going on here. And now that we have this, it helps. And I know regular people don't want to hear this statement, but for me, and this hasn't been put to paper yet, and it will be this year. But for me, if you're O negative blood, you have a 50-50 chance of being a contactee. In reality, that's what the organization would say. In reality, my own personal opinion, I would say you have more like an 80% chance.
Yeah, I was thinking it should be higher than that.
It is higher, but we're being polite saying 50-50 because, there are 700 or 800 million O negatives on the planet. We don't want to start it. Eye color is interesting because green eyes are also a mutation.
But O negative people tend to have green eyes for some reason. A good 50% or more have green eyes. It's also a mutation just like O negative is. So there's a correlation there. There's something, you know, well, whatever mutation they cause is causing this in us. You know, I was always taught that brown and blue made green, and that's why we have green eyes. But I could never understand why the whole world didn't have green eyes. They were only found in a very small part of the world until Europe started colonizing. Green eyes were a very rare thing. Come on, even today, in places like China and Russia and India, which make up almost 3.5 billion people, green eyes are like 1 in 1 billion, 1 in 100 million or something. They're very, very rare. Only in Europe and in the Western world are they even gone. And even here, they still make up less than like 8 or 10% of the eye color. So you got to kind of wonder these low percentages, but yet. And these are, green eyes are prominent in contactees. Probably about 50% of contactees have green eyes. So I don't know if this is because of the contact or this is what they're looking for the contact, but it's definitely without any bounds related to the extraterrestrials. Just something for you to think about, man. That's the other one to think about. Now, anyway, we need to stop talking about this stuff and get on to the meat and potatoes of what we were talking about. Now, for you, what do you think is the most standout experience for you and the one that helped you to come to the realization that this wasn't something normal and that everyday people were dealing with, the thing that really made you know, oh, damn, this isn't right. There's definitely somebody else here. But the reason I'm asking that because, one thing, please, the reason I'm asking that is because I want people to be able to see to distinguish what the logic was that was used, more to say, because you know, you could have just equally thought it was a ghost or a demon or something along those lines.
No.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think when I was probably maybe 32, and this was like the clincher. This made this changed me forever. And it's you know I was abducted. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I had to get up at 7. So I remember just going to bed, turning all the lights off, which by the way, now I don't ever leave a light. I leave a light on in the kitchen or the bathroom, but you know, which is weird because if I do leave a light, if no light's on, then things go bump in the night. I feel something is going to happen to me. And so I'm at 52, and I got to have night lights on.
Hey, look, when I'm in the house, I'll go walking all over the swamp in the middle of the night, but not in my house. Figure that out. Go ahead.
So I went to bed, and some time must have passed by. I woke up, and there was an electric blue, almost black light, blue light that came into my apartment. And I got up, and I looked, and there was 5-4 feet tall. And they had, what was weird is they had big head and big eyes. And they were wearing these blue overalls. Kind of just, I know it's weird.
I know, really. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God. And I even said I didn't want to go. Which bothered me when I thought about this, I said, I didn't want to go yet. I go, I don't want to go yet. I'm not ready yet. I don't want to go. And they grabbed me. They pulled me out of bed. They hoisted me over their head. And I am like, all I remember was seeing the window. And then next thing you know, I'm sitting in a waiting room, real small. And waiting room, and there's a light above me, like it's light, and it's warm, and it's emitting, you know, it's like this warm light coming down on me, and I'm covered in this oily, sparkly stuff, and I'm just completely covered in this oil, and it's sparkling, and I'm wearing this paper sash. Goes over my shoulder and hides my private area, and then the next thing you know, I'm on a table, I'm on a table and I'm looking around, and there's a very tall blonde woman, tall, skinny, 6, 8, maybe 7 feet tall. She is. And there's an arena, and she's talking to all these people, explaining what they're going to do to me. And this is the part I don't like, and this is the part that everybody got it. Okay, I'm laying there, and then all of a sudden this tube comes down from the ceiling, goes right over my, you know, and takes a sperm sample from me. And there's another device they used that had a triangle top to it, and they took a rectal sample from me. And I am laying there, just, I am just really freaked out. And I don't remember yelling or anything. I felt like I was under some kind of heavy medication. And then the next thing I know, they're showing me around the craft. Some creature, alien, is showing me around the craft. I remember seeing a monitor and a very strange sound that sounded like a vacuum when I passed by this panel of monitors. And that's, when I heard that, I went, wow, man, that sounds like a vacuum cleaner. What is this? And so the next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in bed and the sheets are completely over me like they would do a dead person. You know, they cover the sheets over. Mm-hmm. And I threw the sheets off, got up, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, and somehow I had forgotten that I left my keys in the door that night. I don't understand how that happened. So this happened on the fourth floor of my apartment building. And so when I got up, I knew that was real and that I wasn't the same after that anymore. I felt like I was, I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's like you go about your everyday business and life and your friends, and this happens to you. It throws you in a whole different area of thinking and understanding, I've never been able to forget that.
Yeah, well, no, I can understand not forgetting it. That's not even thinking, oh, by the way, most contactees pleasantly call that the melting machine, but we'll leave that alone, because we are supposed to be G-rated. actually, man, I mean, I've heard a couple of different descriptions. They got one thing that comes down, it's got like, it basically, anywhere you got a hole, it puts something there. I was it just sounds too much like fun to me, but... But see, that's the weird part, because that freaks out so many people. And a lot of people can't get past that. Okay, they can't.
Yeah. And, well, I was having a hard time trying to tell you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard to get past. And but if at the moment you seem to get past it, or you seem to be coping with it, might be a better way of saying it, they tend to do like they, you said they did. They'll walk you around, initiate a shift. They may give you something else. They'll put you in the star room or the green room, whatever different people like to call it. They may do things like that. That is to show you that, hey, look, bud, we don't want to kill you. And unfortunately, yes, we have to do some things you're not going to like. But on the other hand, you know, we can, you know, show you things that you might be interested in.
And they have.
Aliens.
They have. And is that the trade-off?
So, I mean, it's not a very good one. Okay, yeah, but it's not good trade-off. All right, now, if they were going to give me, like, gold-pressed latinum or something, we might be able to talk here.
Yeah.
You know, give me some some titanium or something. Should be on with something, man.
This is where it boils down to, about they don't have any idea how we feel about anything. I mean, they're just cut, dry, cold creatures. They just don't have any emotion, and that's I think that the
they're drawn to that. The human experience. I think they really like that. But I just don't understand that whole, you know, hey, we'll do this to you, but then we'll show you this, you know.
And they did. Well, not just weird the way they do. It's just the way they do things, and unfortunately, they've got to do it the way they do it. I'm sure for them, this is a tried and true method. I really am. I'm sure for the alien, this is the way they do things. I really don't have any doubt about that. It's just they don't really have any concept of things like morality or humility or any of these things. And as far as standing around there with a bunch of people, they don't, you know, humans just are not good with it. We should be. We shouldn't be near as modest as we are. We shouldn't be. There's a lot of things we shouldn't be, but we are. So, you know, they just don't seem to. Matter of fact, in most cases, they seem to think a lot of our inhibitions are silly. Maybe silly is not a good word, but they just think it's dumb. They don't think that we should be like that. And they're probably right, and we probably will one day grow out of that. I don't know.
Maybe.
The people that are modest, they're modest. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Look, I got friends, and you've got some family, they'll get naked, run up down the street like it ain't nothing. I got other friends, look, you're lucky you can get in the shirt of skin on their arms, okay? So,
yeah.
I'm not thinking that's going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
But for people like that, this is more traumatic. You know, people who are having the type of phobias to start off with, this is much more traumatic for them. And I guess if you've already got a lot of inhibitions and you throw this on top of it, it can't be a good mix. But then that might be where it comes from. You know, if they've been being contacted all their life, that might be why they don't like being naked, because they've been standing in front of aliens naked all the time. They may feel like they've been naked plenty enough. I don't know. It's one of them things. But you do see contactees do develop little phobias like that. What gets me, too, some contactees will have outstanding health, just outstanding health. They may not get really sick until they die, you know, until it's time for them to go. But then some contactees have one health problem after another, after another, after another. And a lot of times it's weird stuff or stuff that is treatable, but borderline treatable. It really weirds me out. A lot of that really, really weirds me out. At first I just thought it was coincidence, but we've got too many contactees now to think that it's coincidence. There's definitely something going on there, too. It's one of the nice things about doing this, that we get to track all of y'all, and we get to see what's the same, what's not the same. It's like when you were talking about, I'm glad I remember this, I wanted to go back to this. When you were talking about that substance all over your skin, what do you think that was?
I don't know if it was meant for me to kind of, like, sort of a pain medication or something.
Well, that's
or
what it is. The next question I was going to ask you is, how did it make you feel? Because I was more curious about that, because well, go ahead. Did you sense, did it feel, you just felt comfortable, hot, warm, aggravated?
I didn't feel any of those things.
Okay.
I just felt like that I had no feeling, no emotion, no, I didn't feel anything, really. I mean, I don't remember getting mad or other than when they came to get me. I mean, I was like, I don't want to do this, pleading for them not to take me. But when I was, you know, on the table, and I didn't feel any kind of, like, the flight or fight come into me. Yeah. I was just more like, well, you're going to do this to me, and then, you know. And then they did all this stuff, and I don't remember any kind of emotion about that until I came, you know, I was brought back. Then all those emotions came out, and they kept coming out for years. You know, and I remember after that, I remember coming home every night because I worked swing shift. I made sure all the windows were closed. I was under the bed, looked in the closet, looked in the bathroom, made sure our windows were closed. The light was on, and I just went on for years. Where I was definitely, it had an impact on me after I was brought back.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that. The light thing cracks me up because I can't tell you how many contactees tell me about it. I got to have a light on when I'm walking around in my house. But, yeah, and I've had many of them with me walking down a beach in the middle of the night, walking through, and walking on military facilities in the middle of the night. So it's not the dark that they're scared of.
But it's in that house. It's in that house. I got to have a light on if they're walking around. And,
yeah.
You know, they all say the same thing. We all know it's not going to stop anything. But still, like a lady was just telling me yesterday, at least I can see him coming, Joe.
Yeah, at least you have a little bit of one, you know?
Yeah. I just thought it was funny. And it is. It's just one of them things because, you know, it's a good chance that one of them's standing there. So it makes it hard, you know, just worried about it. That's the bad part. So the people who remember, it's just in the back of your head all the time. You know, you think, okay. And then I get contactees that will write to me, or abductees that write to me and say, you know, I was laying on my couch or sitting in a chair the other day, and I was looking at my door, and my door was half open, and it looked like there was a shadow behind it, and it freaked them out, when in reality, there was nothing there. But because of prior contacts, you know, their adrenaline got going so much that it just freaked them out. They're like, whoa.
Yeah,
and then they, you know, they brought themselves back. They're like, okay, well, there's nothing actually there. But that time, anyway, you know, that's that time.
I'm a light sleeper now. I'm a light sleeper now, and have, you know, bouts of insomnia because I'm afraid deep down inside. Maybe I don't show it on the outside, but when it's nighttime, I kind of dread it. You know, it's like I don't want to.
Well,
go
I think
to
that's
sleep.
Why.
I think that's why. Excuse me.
I think that's why half of contactees. Or have drug, alcohol addiction, or some type of addiction. I think it's to numb that. A lot of contactees tell me that. They don't want to sense it. They don't want to feel it. So I've had contactees tell me, oh man, I'll smoke like 3-4 joints while I go to bed so that I don't remember anything. I don't sense anything. And if they do come get me, I'm out of it when they come get me.
Well, of course.
And I'm like, well, yeah, but, you know, I can understand that. I really can. And I mean, granted, some people are going to deal with this better than others, which is how it is. It's like anything in life. Some people handle stress better than others do. But contactees in general generally handle everything good. It's not that they're great or they're going to be world leaders. Some of them may be, but it's almost all of them, are natural-born survivors. They will usually come out and they will survive whatever's happening to them, and they'll usually even come out better off for it in some way or another. Not that it was good to start off with, but they'll get something out of it some way or another. And it's a unique thing about contactees. And I guess it has to be for what's going on, you know. But it does stagnate them in lots of other places in life. You know, they only want to be sociable amongst people that have had experiences. They really don't like socializing with people that are non-experiences, for lack of a better term, because, frankly, you never know when something's going to happen around you.
Yeah.
A lot of times just weird shit just happens when contactees are present. And normal people don't cope with that crap real well.
No, they don't.
You know, now, I was going to ask you, too, earlier, growing up, any interest in vampires, paranormal, ghosties,
was
the other one, dragons, dinosaurs?
I was. When I was a kid, I remember when Lost in Space came out. I was like, I love that show. Because I don't know why.
I still run around, danger, Will Robinson.
You know,
I can't help it, guys. I love it. It was funny stuff.
It is. Every now and then I'll watch it and laugh about how funny it was. But
when I was a kid, it wasn't all that funny now. I got to be honest with you. As a little kid, it wasn't all that funny.
Some of it's not so corny now that I watch it and go, oh, that's very possible. Very possible.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different way. Look, contactees, I always look at the sci-fi a different way. They're like, that doesn't look like my aliens. I love it. We was in one of the conferences about a year ago, 2 years ago. They were watching a movie. I was sitting there thinking, it was like four contactees sitting next to me. They're all going, well, that's not my damn aliens. My aliens don't look like that. And I'm thinking, it's a movie, people. Come on.
Yeah.
No, your aliens don't look like that. These are make-believe aliens. But it was just kind of funny. Now, where are we? Oh. I was thinking about this, too. The reason I was asking you about the substances, there's a couple of substances we know there's used. There's a particular one we refer to as a blue plasma. And it got coined that way, but it's a really weird substance. What happened was is that first we were getting these colors between black, blue, and different kind of blue, like a like a royal electric blue or something. I don't even know how to put it into words. But it took a while to figure out what was going on. I mean, we literally had a couple hundred contactees telling us about this weird color. And I was like, what?
But it was always something different. Like it was on an alien, or it was a pond, or it was on a wall. But they kept seeing this color, and it was bugging me. So we started asking, contact these. The greatest use of substance, it's actually used for several things. It's used for fuel on their ships. It's used as a food source for them themselves. And they like to immerse humans in it for several reasons. One, it makes great restraint, because it did, just like you said, it puts you like in zombie la-la land. But it also does a lot of things as well for the human body, if they allow you to stay in it long. But we didn't know any of this until we started asking contactees to ask. And since then, it seems like, since it's been brought out as part of what happens in abductions, a lot more people, I guess, now are really paying attention and seeing it themselves. You now get people that actually describe the pool, the plasma. Plasma is a bad term. I really don't know what this stuff is. It's a reactive liquid is the best way I could describe it. They call it a plasma because some people describe it like just like something slick or smooth over your skin.
Yeah.
Some people describe it as something like that, but then with a tingling added to it. Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. But still, it's there, and we know a lot of people have described it now, and it's part of the contact scenario. And as long as the ETs aren't lying to us, we probably know what it's for. You know, but we always got to take and consider ET does lie.
Yeah,
because they said that's what it is. I mean, that's what it is. Probably that. I would say it's a good chance that that's what it is. But it just got me thinking about it when you said that. Now, let me ask you this: Do you think there's any time that you could get ET to really just kind of let you do what you want to do on board a ship? Now you're older now, you've been through most of the BS stuff. Mm-hmm. Your contact is moving, like I said earlier, more to like a communicator or keeper stage somewhere along those lines. Let's rephrase that. Your general sense, like when you know they're coming and you know you're on board. I know for most people, no matter how many times this happened, the general sense of it coming is still like, But when you're on board, what is your general sense? I mean, I know you don't have a flight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying. I know you don't have that. I'm saying I'm brain dead tonight. But you definitely don't have it. So what are you sensing? I mean, I know you don't want a lot of this stuff to go on, but then there seems to be something else there. So is it just terror when you're on board, or is it curiosity, or a mix of both, or something entirely different?
Most of the time it's been, the last time I was abducted, which is a few weeks ago. It's like I opened my eyes and I'm standing in the middle of this craft. I mean, I see chairs and this is the only time I ever, most of the time when I didn't go there with them, I'm not scared, but this last one was very scary to me because I didn't want to be there. That was my first reaction was, I need to get out of here. I don't like this, and I don't want to be here. And I started looking around, and I don't know. I just like I was trying to get out of there because I knew it was going to be bad. There was something that I wasn't going to like that was I was going to go through. And sure enough, I was right because it just, my belief is that, it's not a belief, but I wound up pulling my left shoulder so bad that I've never had such excruciating pain because I was trying to get away. I was trying to get off. They put me on a table again, and this time there was some kind of fabric on me, like a grayish fabric, and it also sparkled. And I remember trying to move my left arm. That's all I remember. At least I can move my arm. And I was really trying to get out of there, get my arm out so I could. And then I just now got over this shoulder injury from that. But that's
what I'm trying to say is sometimes I'm really interested in being there, and then there's other times like this one, I knew that it was just not going to be good.
Yeah, I can understand that, too.
Yeah.
Well, because that was a question that someone just wrote in from Sydney and asked. Actually, Sheila from Sydney wrote in and said, wanted to know if the experiences were always good or always bad, and I'm thinking, no, well, sometimes... Oh, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. You want to know if all experiences were good or... But all experiences were good or bad once you were older, meaning over 30. And granted, you may have less bad experiences over 30, but there are still some.
Really good question, because I've had some really good experiences where, this is going to be funny, where I didn't want to come back.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird. Cool. They're weird. Yeah, because they're weird like that. I mean, it's just unfortunate. They just... You know, I don't know if they think of us as like pets or just really, 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 really dumb children or something. Because, like I said, you have to judge them by their actions. If they wanted to enlighten mankind, they've been here 6,000, 10,000 years or more, probably more than that. If they wanted to enlighten us, let's be honest, we'd be a much more enlightened society than we are today, and a much more advanced society than we are today. They didn't interfere when religion went amok for 3,000 years and stagnated technology on the planet for 3,000 years, so they didn't seem to care about that. So they didn't interfere in none of that. They also haven't wiped us out or made us extinct. So if you judge them by their actions, it doesn't seem to be that they're here to save us or to help us. They seem to have their own agenda, and we're part of what they're doing. But what size part, I would say, you know, a medium, maybe a small part. I don't think we're the whole agenda by any means, but... and I really feel with them, there's several agendas. Like we were talking about watching us long term. I have no doubt that's part of what they're doing. They want to see what we're going to evolve into. But meanwhile, I think they're doing quite a few other things to see what our potential is and how fast we're going to evolve. Because I really do think a lot of times they get into positions they want to see how fast we're going to evolve. Socially and militarily, I guess. Because unfortunately, we're still a warlike society. We haven't got past that yet. So I'll have to see where that goes. Something else I wanted to ask you just went right out of my damn brain. So we're gonna get away from the negative experiences for a minute, but on the less negative or on a good experiences, you know, things are going along. I wanted to ask you if they were showing you stuff, but how they were showing it. Were they showing it like to you? Physically moving you around and showing you stuff, or like imaging things through your head? I'm just curious.
No, they would like actually show me stuff, and I'd like to send you some drawings of those
That's
devices.
Cool. Go ahead.
But one of the devices I found really interesting was, and this is right before cell phones came out. This is probably 92. I think maybe 91. They showed me this communicator device that looked like a cell phone, and it had a dial and a little window, and if you flip the top part of it, it opened up to like a star map. And I drew this out, and I remember it'd be interesting to find out where that star, because it had like maybe 3-4 stars, and they were all connected together.
Well, if you got, but you know the, what, if you got a copy of it, send it to me, because I got about 20.
I thought that was
I got
pretty
a few
neat.
Maps in my collection. I'll take a look into the matches and go.
Okay, yeah, it had like volume control on it, but it was about the size of a cell phone you see today. It was pretty interesting.
Probably a really advanced version. Well, I think about our new cell phone. The one I'm getting ready to get is a computer and a cell phone all in one, and it's only 3 inches big. Still waiting for the ones that are in your sunglasses. I don't care if you got to have a little thing you got to carry, the computer, and I want the kind that are in your sunglasses. That's the ones I want, so I have to be driving and computer and get a bobtail.
Yeah.
Actually, I've seen one. The guy had made a 3D one. Unfortunately, the pack he was still carrying was still about 3 pounds and about a foot wide. But his computer was on his sunglasses, and he could flip one side up and just use one side so he could, you know, like like on an aircraft or something. But he said they're going to be less than 6 inches in the next 2 or 3 years. You'd be able to slip it in your back pocket, put it on, put your shades on, and there's your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking computers quite a bit faster than what anybody's using right now, because it's a big leap in technology. So I think, you know, we're really leaping and bounding now. So if the aliens already have things like these, you know, think how much faster they're leaping and bounding than we are. I mean, there's got to be a point where you have to start to slow down technologically because you're reaching so far. But
yeah.
I think that's a billion years down the road. So maybe the Greys might have got there, and they might be slowing down now, but we wouldn't know.
Could be.
And also, I think that accounts for a lot of the old stories in the ancient worlds of gods and deities and demons, because a lot of them sound like the Greys and the reptilians and the humans. Especially when they talk about going missing for days on end and stuff. I'm like, oh, you sound like classic alien abduction to me. But you never know. It's one of them things. Now, what do you think the aliens have in store for you? You think they're going to be harassing you anymore?
Well, I was under the impression back in my 30s that, you know, as you get older, it'll be less frequent and you won't. But I really don't find that true at all. I mean, I feel like they're still coming around and they're still showing me stuff. And
the fact that you found me suggests they got something in store for you for sure. Usually contactees that find me or abductees that find me, there's usually something they got in store for. I'm like the facilitator, I guess. I think that's what they use me for these days, is to make sure they come out of their damn shells or something. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Over the, today, I've talked to 7 different contactees today. Okay. All of them did. I talked to 2 this morning. 1 in Germany. 1 in Poland, in Europe. I talked to what's her name in the UK this afternoon, and then I talked to 3 in the United States. I'm talking to you. And we'll probably talk to another 2 before the night's over. And that's my average day.
Wow.
You know, so when I hear these researchers talk about how much they know because they know 2 contactees, I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me, right? You know, as an organization, we do know a lot, don't get me wrong, but we don't know squat, all right? We know more than the average Joe's going to ever know because there's so many people involved in this. But in the end, we don't know squat. We might know 15% of what's going on. At 20, if I want to indulge this and really give us some props, 20%. Ain't no more than that. And then the fact that ET lies suggests that even that 20% could be circumspect. So it's one of them things. But see, that's why I like talking with people like you and others. But I did learn over the years that generally, you know, there's a reason why contactees find you. And I also noticed something over the years with several of my contactee friends tell me, and I really don't know what this is about. They say once they meet me, they tend to stop having really unpleasant contacts and no military contact after that at all. I'm thinking, guys, that ain't got nothing to do with me. It's a coincidence. You know, it can't be because I don't have that kind of power or control, at least not that I know of. So it has to be a coincidence. And if it's not, then it's ET's doing. You know, or, you know, it's not mine. I wish it was, guys. I'd love to take credit for it. I really would. And if it's something that I don't know about unless I'm on the ship, well, then when we're on the ship, I'll see you guys. How's that? It's funny, too, Joe, because I was talking, you know, while I got this, because we're getting short on time, like, a couple of quick questions. I was talking with a contactee. Actually, I was reading a letter from a contactee this morning. And I had asked her a few questions the other day, and she sent me back some. She had another abduction, and when she came back, she sent me some very detailed answers back. It was just simple questions like, when you were on board, what did the humidity feel like? Was it dry? Was it wet? Was it just pleasant? Average temperature? Yeah, what's the average temperature feel like? What kind of smells? Are there any clinical smells? Mm-hmm. Any hospital smells? So anyway, you know, there's a list of them, and she got picked up night before last, and she sent me the email. I got it this morning. I got the email, or it might have been the day before, but I got the email, and I was reading it this morning, and I'm going through it going, you know, she's like, yeah, I got picked up. She said, I remember it being the ambient temperature in the room was probably in 69, 70 degrees. It wasn't hot, it wasn't cold. There was enough moisture in the air that you knew there was moisture, but it wasn't human or sticky or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's paying attention. She said she could smell something, but it didn't smell clinical. It smelled more like fresh. But then who knows, their chemicals could be more advanced than ours, which was a good answer.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was very aware of her surroundings. And what they've been doing on her lately, she's getting at the end of the 20 cycle. I think she's like 28 or 29. So she's getting at the end of that cycle and getting ready to move into the 30s, which is the next phase of contact. And it's interesting because because of her and a few others that I've been working with over the years, I get to see the process from where they've taken from like the hybrid breeding experiments, the emotional experiments, and then they're bringing them in. And as they're doing this, they seem to be giving them a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more understanding, and a little bit more freedom each way up the totem pole. So it's nice to see it, and that's why I brought it up, because I wanted to see if it was true for you as well.
I think I think you hit it right on the nose, because that's how much it's changed for me now. I feel like I'm learning more. They're showing me more. You know, it's just, I'm just like showing me instruments or whatever. I just feel like, I don't know. It feels
fun. Well,
wow,
that's
really good.
Kids.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, you know, we get to babbling sometimes when I get off on other tangents and I want to come back to stuff. And unfortunately, I own the station, so if we run over a few minutes, and nobody can get in trouble but us. But, you know, wait, there's something else I wanted to tell you. Damn it. Oh, I hate when my brain does that. I'm 38. Oh, I'll go for that. Yeah, I am 38. Yeah, that works for me. Look, we ever sent that? Damn straight, 38. That's good. Good much for me. The other Joe, he's 38 too. Damn, that works. <You're false. laughs> I don't know, guys. It's one of the strange things. So for me, it's been interesting. I've been watching progression, seeing what's going on. What I'll do, this series isn't going to end until like October, probably around Halloween. I think that's when the last show is going to happen, is around Halloween. After that, though, for the new guys, not so much for the older contactees, not only age-wise, I mean, you know, how many times they've been on air. I think I'm going to have them, Linda and Paul, reschedule some of the other contactees just to give them a chance to come on and talk a little bit more about their personal experiences. Because, like tonight, I wanted you to talk about your personal experiences, but I also wanted you to kind of let the audience hear some things in your own words that they've already heard from other people in the series. This is to help educate the general population, you know. So when they're hearing a friend talk or a loved one talk, and they might hear this stuff, they're like, oh, wait a minute, I know what that is, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, you know, let's be honest. We are talking about everyday people, so the sheeple factor.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, you know? Literally, somebody asked me this the other day, and before we go off the air, I'm going to try to answer this question real quick. Somebody asked me if the chemtrails was the ET's way of keeping the rest of the population dumbed down. I mean, not the ET's, the government's way of keeping the rest of the population dumbed down, but they thought that the contactees and abductees may be immune to it. Well, I do think that it is some type of mood enhancement agent, because in this state, they only spray before holidays. Usually 2 weeks before holidays, they start getting chemtrails. So I do think they're using it as something, and we got Mardi Gras and all kinds of big holidays down here. So I do think that, and since Katrina, everyone in my state is walking around like, yeah, okay, all right, okay.
Uh-huh.
This is a very passionate, back-ass-word state, and they ain't never walking around like that. Now all of a sudden the whole state's like, it's the BP oil spill. Nobody even got mad. I'm thinking, did I like move out of the country or something? I'm like, no, there's something to that. Our contactees immune, they must be, because we seem to get pissed about it. So it must be. And then the thing about, would the aliens make us immune to like a drug attack on the planet? Well, yeah, I would think they would. I don't know why they would. Well, yeah, I guess they would. I think one of the agendas may even entail some kind of immunity for certain types of drugs on the planet. Maybe stuff that they know our governments are working on. Maybe stuff that they might want to thin the population with. But I would imagine abductees and contactees are immune to that kind of stuff. I bet you it's built into it. It's built into it.
Yeah.
Or for the ones that are going to be here anyway. You know, let me ask you this, too. We got to get out of here in a minute. But while I'm on board, have you ever seen, from time to time we get reports of like, we're full of, I don't want to say bodies, because they're not dead, but they're not alive either. They're usually being tubes or chambers or something. Sometimes they'll look like people you know, sometimes not, but they're just bodies. They look hell, they don't think anything's wrong with them or anything, but not everybody sees them. I always ask, just on the outside chance that, you know, somebody we're talking to might, have you ever seen any? Or?
Oh, no, I didn't quite catch the last part of that, so.
Let me move the speaker over, I mean, mic over better. Just every now and then we get descriptions of room full of, they're like chambers or, tubes, and a lot of times they'll have bodies in them, and the bodies will sometimes look like people, you know, but sometimes they look like other people, but they don't look like anything wrong with the bodies, but the bodies themselves don't look sentient, I guess, like there's no spark of consciousness there. It's just like a host body. I was just asking if you had ever seen any of them before.
Yes, I have. Yeah. I get the impression it's like a, sometimes I think it's a hospital or something, but I seen this a lot where I see people laying down there and they're not moving, but I know they're alive. There's nothing, you know, they're just laying there. And
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say I don't want to call it a theory or anything. There's a rumor floating around that, you know, ET a lot of times is seen over mortuaries and graveyards.
Yeah, that's what it kind of reminds me of almost.
Yeah, well, we couldn't figure out exactly what was going on. And then about a dozen or so contactees, all in a couple of weeks, were seeing themselves inside these tubes and stuff. And then over the next 2 or 3 years, we had a lot more of them, and they were seeing images of their stuff, but they said their bodies didn't look quite the same. They're a little bit different, maybe structured a little bit different, but it did look like them. Well, what it seems like ET is doing, and we have no idea how, before people start writing to me, which is, you heard what I said in the beginning. It does
seem
like...
They don't look very healthy to me. They don't look very healthy to me.
No, that's because those probably aren't. What they're saying they're doing is they're uploading your consciousness from the dying body or the dead body in some cases into a new host body. And until your consciousness takes over, you know, the body just looks like it's a dead, it's just laying there dead. And it's really freaky stuff. But like I said, it's a rumor, theory, whatever you want to call it. We've heard about this now 50 or 60 times. But it does explain why ET would be hanging out over hospitals and graveyards and mortuaries and stuff. Because they're grabbing their contactees before they lose their whatever they consider us to be. Because they're like up in the fact that this is flesh. This isn't us. This isn't what makes us us. What makes us is something else. Energy, electricity, plasma, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the brain works on electrical impulses. That's what we actually are, is energy. If anything's left when we die, that's what it's going to be, is in a form of energy or some kind of consciousness. And I think they already know that. And that and the graves have always said that they grow their own bodies, and periodically, you know, couple of million years, they upload into a new body. Basically, they have eternal life. And
they don't do a very good job.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. And then recently, just about 2 years ago, 5 years ago is when the guy put the chip in his head and started downloading his memories into a chip, and then taking the chip out of his head and downloading those memories into a computer. That's where this all started. But the U.S. government is now working on a project, because, you know, we're so against clones in the United States. They're working on a project where you should be able to take your consciousness, put it onto a disk, and then put it onto a new body. Overlay it into a new body. And I'm thinking, well, unless we can grow bodies, that means you're going to get another childhood. They could take your DNA and have a baby and then lay your consciousness in over it. But still, man, you got to grow.
I'm not sure how that's going to work. Now, if they grow the bodies to term and then do it, that's a different story. You know, somebody suggested that all humans, sooner or later, one day all humans will have a body somewhere that when you something happens to you, you can just download your consciousness into it. Because the country's not going for having clone bodies in warehouses for spare parts. That was the first alternative. That's what they wanted to do at first. They wanted to clone everybody's body and make it brain dead. Anytime you needed an organ or a part, you would just go there and get it. there, and everybody in the country would pay a fee to keep it there. The country did not like that idea, not even a little bit.
Yeah.
We outlawed cloning because of that idea. We said, oh, no, we're not going there, sorry, that's not going to happen. But the thing about growing bodies, and then, because what they're saying is, you can start a body when you were born, you can grow a body. Or wait a couple of years after when you're 15, 16, start growing a body. And then, something happens, you can be transferred. And then when that body's about 30, they can start growing another one. And that way, that one can be terminated when you turn in and you can be downloaded into the younger one. I don't know how they're going to do this. It's just really interesting stuff to me. I think they're doing this so that the really, really rich can live a lot longer. And I think what they're going to do with that is just download over other people's consciousness and wipe somebody else's brain out and download right over. So that's going to be interesting in itself. But, Joe, we're definitely out of time. We're going to run over about 10 minutes. Any parting words before we get out of here?
I really don't, other than, for the abductees or contactees, just hang in there and find some friends or people that will listen to you and everything's going to be all right. We just need to stick together.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But send them pictures over for sure. If they'd like to take a look at them and that map, I really, because right now I'm actually working on a map that I'm not working on, I'm reviewing. Kate Wilson sent over for a friend of ours who had just did a comparison on the Betty Barney Hill map and Kate Wilson's map. So I'd like to see if yours has even had anything to do with those. I'm actually looking at how he came to his conclusions. I've been reading about it last couple of days, and on and off. I'm trying to, determine how I feel about it, because I'm funny about maps. Without reference points, I'm funny. I'm like, what the hell? You got to prove this to me. But yeah, get a chance, send them all over. And I had a great time tonight, man.
Me too.
Hopefully we'll get to talk again real soon.
Sounds good.
Someone else wanted to say, guess I'm just leaving as usual. Oh, that's what it was. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, this is week 5 of the Contactee Study, Abductee Study. It's going to run for another 15 weeks, and then there will be 4 panel shows following those 15 shows, where we're going to invite back 5 of the guests for each one of the shows, so that they can come on and talk with the other abductees / contactees, and so that the listening audience can get a lot more questions in, because it's going to be harder for y'all to get questions in the series, but it'll be a lot easier to get the questions in during the panel series, but you can still call in questions, it's just going to be hard to get them in there. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get out of here, guys and girls. Don't forget, sometime this week I will put up the updated list for the schedule. And I will be talking with one of my friends who will be interviewing me in the near future, so I will also post that on the schedule, because I'm going to be one of the ones on the interviews. I think that's about it, guys. So until next week, have some fun, enjoy your life, smile, hug your cat, hug your dog, hug your kids, just kid. Y'all have a great evening, guys. See everybody next week. Good night, everybody.
Rumors spreading around in that Texas town.